chapter 5, Lord Rishabhadev's teaching to his sons, and the first verse, which unfortunately is not on the board. There's a chapter summary, so we'll read that before going on to the shloka. In this chapter, there is a description of Bhagavata Dharma, religious principles in devotional service, that transcend religious principles for liberation and the mitigation of material misery. It is stated in this chapter that human beings should not work hard like dogs and hogs for sense gratification. The human life is especially meant for the revival of our relationship with the Supreme Lord. And to this end, all kinds of austerities and penances should be accepted. By austere activities, one's heart can be cleansed of material contamination. And as a result, one can be situated on the spiritual platform. To attain this perfection, one has to take shelter of a devotee and serve him. Then the door of liberation will be open. Those who are materially attached to women and sense gratification gradually become entangled in material consciousness and suffer the miseries of birth, old age, disease, and death. Those who are engaged in the general welfare of all and who are not attached to children and family are called Mahatmas. Those who are engaged in sense gratification, who act piously or impiously, cannot understand the purpose of the soul. Therefore, they should approach a highly elevated devotee and accept him as a spiritual master. By his association, one will be able to understand the purpose of life. Under the instructions of such a spiritual master, one can attain devotional service to the Lord, detachment from material things, and tolerance of material misery and distress. One can then see all living entities equally, and one becomes very eager to know about transcendental subject matters. Endeavoring persistently for the satisfaction of Krishna, one becomes detached from wife, children, and home. He is not interested in wasting time. In this way, one becomes self-realized. A person advanced in spiritual knowledge does not engage anyone in material activity. And one who cannot deliver another person by instructing him in devotional service should not become a spiritual master, father, mother, demigod, or husband. Instructing his 100 sons, Lord Rishabhadev advised them to accept their eldest brother Bharat as their guide and lord, and thereby serve him. Of all living entities, the Brahmanas are the best. And above the Brahmanas, the Vaishnavas are situated in an even better position. Serving a Vaishnava means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, means serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Shukadeva Goswami describes the characteristics of Bharat Maharaj and the sacrificial performance executed by Lord Rishabhadev for the instruction of the general populace. This is a very famous shloka today. I'm hoping that many of you know it, so even if it's not on the board, then you can still chant it. How many devotees know this verse? Nayam deho deho pajam riloke. Matresh Prabhu. And if anyone has a book, please follow along, or iPad or any such device. Rishabha uvacha. Nayam deho deha.
Nayam deho deha.
Pajam riloke. Kashtan
kaman
arhate
vidbhujamye
tapo divyam putraka
yena
sattvam
shudyet
yasmad brahma sokhyam
tvanantam.
Rishabha uvacha. Nayam deho deha.
Bhajam
driloke. Kashtan
kaman.
Arhate.
Vidbhujamye.
Tapo divyam putraka.
Yena
sattvam. Shudyet
yasmat brahma.
Sokhyam
dvanantam.
Rishabha uvacha.
Nayam deho deha.
Bhajam
driloke.
Kashtan kaman
arhate.
Vidbhujamye. Tapo divyam putraka.
Yena
sattvam
shudyet yasmat brahma sokhyam dvanantam.
Anyone want to try?
Rishabha uvacha nayam deho deha bhajam triloke kashtan kaman arhate vid bhujamye tapo divyam putraka yena sattvam shudyet yasmat brahma sokhyam dvanantam.
Anyone? Rishabhavacha. Lord Rishabhadev said,
Not.
I am. This.
Deha.
Body.
Deha
bhajam.
Of all living entities
who have accepted material bodies.
Nriloke.
In this world.
Kashtan.
Troublesome.
Kaman.
Sense gratification.
Arhate.
Deserves.
Vit bhujam.
Of stool eaters.
Yeah.
Which?
Tapaha.
Austerities and penances.
Divyam.
Divine.
Putrakaha.
My dear sons.
Yena.
By which?
Sattvam.
The heart.
Shudhyet.
Becomes purified.
Yasmat.
From which?
Brahma Sokhyam.
Spiritual happiness.
To.
Certainly.
Anantam.
Unending. Translation. Lord Rishabhadev told his sons, my dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. Please repeat.
Lord Rishabhadev told his sons,
my dear boys,
of all the living entities
who have accepted material bodies in this world,
one who has been awarded this human form
should not work hard day and night
simply for sense gratification,
which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity
to attain the divine position of devotional service.
By such activity,
one's heart is purified.
And when one attains this position,
he attains eternal blissful life,
which is transcendental to material happiness
and which continues forever.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Lord Rishabhadev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word dehabhak refers to anyone who accepts a material body. But the living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals, like dogs and hogs, enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night.
by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness, but as long as one is engaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. A higher sense is present in the human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead. It is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardian, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or a dog. The instructions of Rishabdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office he works hard from 9 to 5. Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex. Rishabdev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hogs. Indeed, dogs and hogs do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hogs. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. By taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home, back to Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4.9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvatah tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti sarjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. This is the first verse of fifth chapter, Lord Rishabdev's teachings to his sons. And as I mentioned before, this is a very, very famous shloka. And Srila Prabhupada spoke on this verse many times. Can anyone guess how many times Srila Prabhupada lectured on this verse? Try. 32. Of all the verses in Bhagavatam that I could look up, this verse is the equal number one for Srila Prabhupada speaking on, 14 times. 14 different lectures Srila Prabhupada gave on this verse. And the other shloka, which Srila Prabhupada also spoke on 14 times, can anyone guess? No, from Bhagavatam. One, two, six. Who knows 1, 2, 6? Yeah, who said it? Savaipumso, paro dharmo, yado bhakti rasakshate. So both these verses, Srila Prabhupada spoke 14 times. So to try to do justice to the shloka in one class is quite a challenge. There are so many points made by Lord Rishabdev here. It's one of these core verses that devotees should all learn and memorize and try to put into practice. So Rishabdev here is addressing his sons,
and he's beginning to wind down his activities as king. He's going to soon retire from the kingdom and practice austerities. So as he says here, the goal of human life is to perform such tapasya. So before he leaves, he wants to ensure that his sons are trained up properly, so they have the right instruction on how to conduct their lives, because very soon he won't be in the picture anymore. He won't be present to guide them in person. And he's going to advise them to take shelter of their elder brother, Bharat Maharaj. So this is the duty of the guru or the father, to train the disciple, to train the children in Krishna consciousness. So once there was a king named Dhavala Chandra, and he lived in great Indian ancient city of Pataliputra. So like Rishabdev, he was also anxious to train up his sons. Of course, all parents are concerned about raising their children properly, but the kings have a special concern, because they know that once they leave, the next king will be their son, and if the king is not trained up properly, then the entire kingdom will be put into difficulty. So it's very, very important for the new king, the princess, the crown prince, to be trained up properly. So this king, he was worried about his sons. They were not learning properly, they were being wild and unsubmissive, not good material to take over the kingdom. So one day King Dhavala Chandra, he heard some verses being chanted. And he was talking about how this Janma, Aishvarya, Shruta, Shribi, these opulences, birth, beauty, high birth, beauty, strength, intelligence, these are all very dangerous by themselves, in and of themselves. Each of these qualities can distract one. What to speak of when one has all of them? So he was thinking of his princes. Naturally, they're born in a very great family. They're strong, powerful. They have access to the royal treasury, so they have unlimited facility for sense gratification. So he was worried about the future. And another verse that he heard was how knowledge is the real... knowledge gives proper vision. Without knowledge, one is considered blind. So he started to contemplate, you know, my sons are promiscuous and wild. I have to do something to train them properly. Just like Lord Rishabhdev is concerned about his sons. And as the king is musing, he chants another very famous shloka, which Srila Prabhupada used to often quote, about the difference between the animals and the humans. Just like here, Rishabhdev is making that distinction. So the king is contemplating this quandary that he's in, and he chants another very famous shloka. Ahara nitra bhayamaitunam cha samaname tat pashubhir naranam dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubhis samana. So he's reflecting, what is the difference between the animals and the humans? The animals eat, humans eat. Animals sleep, we also sleep. Animals procreate, so do humans. And both species, animals, humans, everyone, defends themselves. So these activities are common to both, to all living entities, to the animals, to the humans, to everyone. But the one distinct quality that the humans have, which is not found in the animal kingdom, is dharma. Dharmo hitesho adhikyo vishesho. Special quality not found in the animal kingdom, which the humans have facility for, is dharma. Of course, dharma itself is a very big subject matter. Prabhupada would often translate as the nature of the soul, or as devotees we translate it as the nature of the soul to be Krishna conscious, or sometimes it's translated as religion, spirituality. So that is the difference between the human form of life and the animal species. The animals, they don't worship God, they don't do meditation. They're simply engaged in the four activities: eating, sleeping, mating, defending. But if a human being does not engage in dharma, then there's no difference between him and an animal. That's the last line of the verse. Dharmena hina. Hina means bereft of, devoid of dharma, pashubhi samana. Then a human is equal to an animal. The same point here Rishabhdev is making. One should not be like a dog or a hog. So the king, Dhavalachandra, he was reflecting on this, and he addressed his assembly asking, please, can someone train my children? So far he hadn't been successful. Then one great sage named Vishnu Sharma, he volunteered, said, I'll take up the challenge to train the princes. And then he spoke to them the Hitopadesh, which is a scripture. Literally it means beneficial instructions, and there are four different divisions of this book, and they're all the stories are between animals. It's just a collection of stories with important moral principles. So of course we know children all like to hear stories. Everyone actually likes to hear stories. So the sage was able to get through to the princes by attracting them by these very interesting stories. And through the stories he was able to preach dharmic principles, and that way bring them to the right path. And so this is the Hitopadesh, and Srila Prabhupada would often quote, especially this verse, the difference between humans and animals, and also other verses giving different moral principles, which are all very important for civilized human life. So as I mentioned earlier, the other shloka that Srila Prabhupada spoke on this many times was Sarve Pumsa Paro Dharmo, from the second chapter of the first canto. And there also, it's a very similar conclusion to that section. The Sarve Pumsa Paro Dharmo verse is explaining how the ultimate dharma is whatever brings one closer to Krishna. And if one performs dharma, verses go on. Dharma svanushita pumsa vishvaksena kathasuya. If one performs dharma and doesn't awaken his attraction, his rati, to the Lord, then shrama eva hi kevalam. All his so-called dharma is just a shrama. Shrama means labor, hard labor for no result. Then the next shloka is dharmasya hyapavargasya nartho tayo pakalpate nathasya dharma kantasya kama labhaya hismita. So dharma is actually meant for apavarga, means liberation. And liberation comes about by cultivating one's relationship with the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting explanation of what is this apavarga. So we know in the Sanskrit alphabet there are different sets of letters. There's the ka varga, there's the ka, ka, ga, ga, na, and then there's the ta varga, cha varga, all these different sets of five letters. Ka, ka, ga, ga, na, cha, 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 ja, nya, ta 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 da na, ta 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 da na, pa 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 ma, like that. So pa varga is the set of five letters that start with pa. So each of these letters has a special explanation. Pa, ha, ba, pa, ma. So Srila Prabhupada explains pa. What is pa? Pa means the same word we just spoke, shrama, parishrama. Shrama means hard labor, parishrama means excessive hard labor. So Prabhupada explained parishrama. What is the material mode of life? One works very hard. It's like here it's mentioned. One works hard day and night. And Prabhupada gives a very interesting little description of how the modern man commutes to work every day. All over the world, majority of people have to commute to work, 1 hour, 2 hours, taking the subway, taking a bus, taking a train, or driving, getting stuck on the highway for hours in traffic jams. And obviously Srila Prabhupada has personally experienced this. Most of Prabhupada's purports are translations from the previous acharyas. Prabhupada would read the commentaries and then he would translate the purports into English. But often he would add his own realization. So definitely here Srila Prabhupada is adding his own experience. And if you have ever taken the Krishnanagar local to Calcutta, or from Navadvip, either the local trains, you see this every day. People are packed so tightly in the trains, you can't even stand. There's not even standing room. People are hanging off the train to get to work. Both going there 2-3 hours, coming back 2-3 hours. So this is called parishrama, working very, very hard, day and night. So that is pa. Then ha. This is fena. Fena means foam. I don't know, in Gurukul we used to have fena bhat, which is like a khichdi without dal. It's a white, mushy rice. Like foamy
Phena. Phena means foam. So one works so hard that the mouth starts foaming. And this is the material, the material way of life is to increase everything, push people more and more. And when one is young and starts working in the material world, they often work not just 9 to 5, Prabhupada mentions here 9 to 5. 9 to 5 is now old. Now people work overtime, they do night shifts, they work at home, they work on the weekends. There's so much pressure. And sometimes people just drop dead on the spot. Just the bodies can't even cope so much work, trying to get ahead of the others, try to get a promotion. So this is called phena. We work so hard that foam comes out of the mouth. Ba, pa, ba. And ba is vyartata. Vyartata means kind of uselessness or being foiled in one's goals. It's all useless ultimately. Because even if one works very hard and is so-called successful in the material world, there's no real enjoyment to be had. And so many times people are frustrated in their endeavors. So vyartata, they don't actually get what they're looking for. And as one ages, then bha, bhaya, there's so many fears in the material world, especially as the body starts to age, and one isn't able to engage the senses in sense gratification so strongly. There's so many signs that we heard last year in the Paranjana story, how the onset of old age is very fearful. So that's bhaya, one becomes fearful. And ultimately, no matter what happens, ma, mrityu, one is faced with all-consuming death. There's no escaping death, as sure as death, the saying goes. So pa, 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 ma. Parishrama, hard work, phena, work so hard that one foams at the mouth. Vyartata, ba, vyartata, one is foiled. Bha is fear, and ultimately mrityu, ma, death. So this is pavarga. So apavarga, the shloka is, that's the negative part of the word, but the shloka is actually saying apavargasya. So dharma is meant for apavargasya, for turning this process upside down, for spiritual advancement, not for material entanglement, for liberation. So this is the goal of dharma. One should act in such a way one will attain liberation. How does one do that? Rishabdev says here, by tapasya. So what is the difference between tapasya that a transcendentalist is supposed to undergo and the hard work of the materialists? Because materialists are working hard, the devotees are also working hard. So one is tapasya and one is hard work. So externally it might seem that devotees are also working very hard, materialists are also working very hard. And Prabhupada would often make the comparison, that it's not that devotees are lazy, we also work hard. In fact, the temple is not meant for lazy people, lazies and crazies. But the work that devotees perform, devotional service, is for Krishna. It has a transcendental result, a transcendental objective, whereas the materialists are working simply for sense gratification. And sometimes when Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, he would say that the people, the neighbors are so envious. We have a huge building, the whole block was owned by the devotees, so many devotees, so many cars, Sankirtan vans going in and out, and the neighbors are envious of us, but they won't join us. They're thinking, these people are sadhus, but they have so much facility, so why don't they join? They can also join and take part in Krishna consciousness. So it's not that devotees don't engage in tapasya, we engage in spiritual tapasya. Not because there are also so many rishis and sages who may be undergoing tapasya, but if they're not connecting that tapasya to the Lord, if it's not engaged in devotional service, then that tapasya also has no real benefit. It's simply sattvic activity, it may gradually elevate one. But it's not the tapasya that Rishabdev is referring to, that Prabhupada is referring to. Actually, when Prabhupada was giving lectures on this verse, often he would quote, the tapasya for us is basically it's the four regulative principles. And it's interesting to note that really, especially in Satya Yuga, this verse is being spoken in Satya Yuga. And it's not, as far as I can understand, Satya Yuga was such a transcendental time that this verse is not as applicable to the sons of Rishabdev as it is to us. Actually, Prabhupada says that himself in the purport. that at the present time this verse is very relevant. In Satyuga, we see Rishabhdev sons. Who are his sons? Rishabhdev himself is the incarnation of the Lord. And his son is Bharatmaraj, is the greatest king, after whom the entire planet has been named Bharatvarsha. Nine of his sons are the nine Yogendras, great, like, mystic, eternal sages. Kavi, Havi, Antariksha, Prabhuta, Pipalayana, Turumala, Chamasa, Avihotra, one more, Karabhajana. These are, you know, like top level sages in the universe. And in the 11th canto, they instruct Maharaj Nimi. So who is Rishabhdev instructing here? You know, he's not instructing just his sons. These instructions are for eternity, especially for us now. Much more relevant, I think, than they were in Satyuga. Because now we see people are working like this, hard day and night, simply for sense gratification. So the tapasya for the devotee, in one sense, we don't do that much tapasya. We're not asked to circle ourselves with fire in the middle of the summer and meditate on the Supersoul, to submerge ourselves in icy water in the winter. And these are Vedic austerities that were very prevalent in Satyuga also. Austerity for Vaishnavas, we have certain fasting days. We fast on Ekadashi, we fast on Krishna's appearance day. We have to rise early to attend the temple program. Once you've done it for a few years, it becomes habit. It's not even an austerity anymore. Four regulative principles. For some people who, you know, have come from difficult backgrounds, that may be an austerity in the beginning. But after some time, even that becomes just natural. So really, Krishna consciousness is not so much austerity compared to the Vedic sages or compared to the materialists. At the same time, we do want to engage ourselves properly in Krishna consciousness and work hard for Krishna to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And sometimes it's said that tapasya has no use. There's no use in performing tapasya if one is not a devotee. Aradito yadi haris tapasa tataha kim. Na aradito yadi haris tapasa tataha kim. It's an interesting shloka. That if one worships the Lord, if one worships Hari, then what is the point of doing tapasya? And na aradita, if one doesn't worship the Lord, then what's the point of doing tapasya? So the real crux of the matter is one's connection with Krishna. One can engage in tapasya if it is for the purpose of worshipping the Lord, honoring the Lord, spreading His glories. Then tapasya has some value. Otherwise, there are many verses saying that simply by tapasya, one cannot attain the Lord. Ruhuganaita tapasana yati, not by renunciation, not by tapasya. These things have no, by themselves, have no real value for advancing in Krishna consciousness. One has to engage everything in the Lord service, in service of the Lord. Tapasya has only benefit if it is for the pleasure of the Lord. So, four regulative principles, as I was saying, for these great personalities in Satyuga, four regulative principles are not even, you know, like a non-event. In Satyuga, who was drinking, who was engaging in intoxication, meat eating, gambling, these things were pretty much unheard of. The demons would live in separate planets. They would engage in these activities. Certainly, Rishabhdev's sons were not engaged in such activities. So, even in Kali Yuga, you know, the people who come from high-class backgrounds, like, you know, nice Brahmin families in India, they also never in their lives engaged in the four sinful activities. So, in one sense, there's nothing even spiritual about engaging in, about restraining oneself from these four activities. It's simply a civilized human platform. Civilized human does not engage in the four sinful activities. So, in one sense, it's not even a big deal that one is following the four regulative principles. That's why we have the positive principle, chanting 16 rounds a day. That actually will give us tangible spiritual advancement. Four regulative principles will block us from accessing Krishna's mercy through the holy name. If we indulge in sinful activities, we won't be able to make proper advancement from chanting Hare Krishna. So if we restrain ourselves, follow the principles, and we engage in devotional service, especially chanting Hare Krishna,
then one can actually make tangible spiritual progress.
When Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers were preaching, went to Europe to preach, Prabhupada would often quote the famous incident where one of the sannyasis, Prabhupada's godbrother, met a very noble British lord, the Marquis of Zetland, some very, you know, top nobility, member of the nobility. So the British lord asked the sannyasi, you know, Vaishnava Gaudiya, Vaishnava sannyasi, how can I become a brahmana? And Srila Prabhupada's godbrother explained, well, it's not that difficult, you have to follow these principles. No meat eating, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. Now, for a devotee, that's not a big deal. Even for a high-class Indian brahmana background, those things are natural. But when the so-called lord heard these principles, he just laughed and said, impossible. And that was his response. It wasn't even consideration that I could do such a thing. And therefore, those devotees who went to Europe to preach, they didn't have much success. They encountered this kind of resistance, even from someone who's supposed to be a very aristocratic gentleman. So Srila Prabhupada also, when he first started preaching, he didn't immediately tell the new devotees who first were coming to 26 Second Avenue, he didn't immediately restrict them in these ways. Srila Prabhupada was very intelligent, and he just invited everyone to come. He spoke about Krishna. He personally cooked prasadam for them. He engaged them in kirtan. And once they were attracted by the beauty of devotional service, once they had some taste, then they were able to gradually give up the four sinful activities. Whereas it's conceivable that if Prabhupada had immediately told the first people who walked in the door, you can only come here if you do this, don't do this, don't do this, that would have been very difficult. Srila Prabhupada very intelligently gave them a taste of Krishna consciousness. And once experiencing that higher taste, then gradually they were able to give up the sinful activities and then come to the platform of initiation. It's even described in San Francisco, sometimes Prabhupada would be walking on the street past the donut shop, and the new devotees were eating donuts, and they knew they shouldn't be eating in a restaurant. And they would see Prabhupada walking by and kind of like, try to hide themselves so he wouldn't see them. Because they still had some material attachments, but as they engaged more and more in devotional service, especially in the association of a pure devotee, like Srila Prabhupada, then they were able to give up all these sinful activities. So the first point that actually comes in the purport is the human form, the special feature of the human form of life. And sometimes I wonder about how rare it is actually. You know, we know there are 8,400,000 species of life, and the human population is what, around 6 billion now, at least on this planet. And compared to the insects, compared to the animals, compared to the birds, compared to the plants, all the different forms of life, the numbers of humans, very tiny percentage. And then among those humans, Prabhupada explains how there are so many uncivilized tribes, and they're human in form, but actually they're not human they're not civilized humans. They're like the animals we spoke of, who simply engage in those animalistic activities. They don't have the concept of dharma. So actually the civilized humans are very few. And then, especially on the Earth planet, we have more facility. The demigods, the demons, they're busy engaged in their enjoying and their suffering, and they don't have the they don't have the facility that the humans have on this planet to actually make spiritual progress, to try to destroy one's karma. The heavenly planets, they're simply enjoying. They're enjoying the fruits of their pious activities. And all the humans in the lower planets, the hellish planets especially, they're simply forced to undergo the results of their bad karma. So it's only a very tiny percentage of us who are born on this planet in a human form, in a civilized human form, who have access, who have the possibility to access the spiritual knowledge. In one of Prabhupada's lectures on this verse, he was saying how
it's not necessary to eat meat. But there is some concession. If someone lives in a desert environment, you mentioned the Arabians, there's no vegetables growing there. You know, the Bedouin tribes, people in the deserts, Sahara Desert, Arabian Desert, they can't cultivate any fruits or vegetables. So for them, it's allowed to eat meat. Or perhaps people who live in the Arctic Circle, there's no facility. So for those people, but it's understood, those births are not so pious. They're born in such a desolate environment because of some bad karma. And therefore they're allowed to eat meat, perhaps, in the absence of any other sattvic food. But for most people, for us, people living in normal countries, there's no need to eat meat. We have sufficient quantity of wonderful sattvic varieties of food. So Prabhupada mentioned that in one of his classes on this shloka. So human form is very, very rare. And as Krishna says in Gita, out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. So actually the numbers of devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement compared to the population of the planet also very, very minute. So we have such a responsibility. It's such an amazing mercy that we've been given. Of all the living entities in the material world, we've been born in a civilized human form on this planet at this time when Srila Prabhupada came to the West and preached Krishna consciousness. And we've come in touch with that. We've accepted the process of Krishna consciousness. It's actually quite in a percentage-wise, it's almost impossible number. You know, the fortune we have in our current position, we're living here in Mayapur, able to hear Bhagavatam every day, chant Hare Krishna every day, living in a holy place, worshipping the Lord, worshipping Tulsi. It's an incredible opportunity for all of us. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada is instructing us to take Krishna consciousness seriously and to also try to spread this knowledge, give it to the other people, the people in the trains who are taking 3 hours just to get to the office and working all day and then taking another 3 hours to come home. And in that way, uselessly spending their lives devoid of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says in the end of the purport, the living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he can become eligible to return home back to Godhead. So I'll end here unless anyone has any questions or comments.
Just now, this Bhakti Yoga is mentioned. So, also you just now mentioned how we have an incredible opportunity to be in the Dham, worshipping the deity and the Tulsi. So the problem with me is this is the purpose of Bhakti Yoga. So Krishna says, if with love and devotion, one offers Supreme Lord. So I find I can do it for some time, but how can you inspire me to continue day after day, not considering it acted out of pure love and devotion? How can you explain me love and devotion throughout my day, throughout my life? If I'm clear?
Maybe. Perhaps to take your question a little further, I think what you're hinting at is that we can perform the activities of devotional service, but in a mechanical way. We can get kind of just do it by habit, and maybe not actually experience that higher taste or not actually be making advancement. So yes, that is definitely a challenge for many devotees, myself also, that we may be following the externals for years and years. And that's actually the shloka is there, the Bahujanma Kori Jati Shavana Kirtan, Tabudana Bhaya Krishna Pade Premathan. If you chant Hare Krishna even for many, many births, but you don't avoid the offenses, then you will never attain the level of Godhead. So that is a challenge, definitely. And we can fall into that trap of just routine devotional service. So the remedy for that, I would suggest, is one, your association. If you're always trying to serve and associate with senior devotees, the next verse, tomorrow's shloka is Mahat Sevan Dwara Mahor Vimuktes. This will be spoken tomorrow by Janayavas Prabhu. It talks about by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. So if one associates with senior devotees, then in their association one will be encouraged, get inspiration to advance. If one chants Hare Krishna with concentration, not simply mechanically, then naturally one's taste will be, one's taste will develop. And if one reads every day Srila Prabhupada's books, then one is constantly in touch with Srila Prabhupada's Vani, then naturally also one will be encouraged to make progress rather than simply being satisfied, which is kind of a contamination of sattva guna when it's just satisfied with what one's doing and not going out of the so-called comfort zone. Also preaching, that also forces one to study, to internalize the teachings so you can spread it to others. Also preaching also is very important. So that's why Prabhupada gave us this system, the Krishna Conscious Movement. We have our sadhana, we have our service, and we should always be trying to not just maintain but increase. Prabhupada, another one of his lectures on this verse, he talks about Raghunath Das Goswami. How Raghunath Das Goswami, he was reducing his eating, reducing his sleeping to almost nil. And he gave the whole description of how first Raghunath Das Goswami was living at home, and he was, his parents, his father and his uncle were supremely wealthy. So he had all facilities. They married him to someone who, she said she was like a Lakshmi. And still he was not attached at all. He was trying to escape to go to Lord Chaitanya. And he did eventually escape. Then his father was sending him money, and he was using that money to feed all the Vaishnavas. Then after some time he thought, I shouldn't depend on money from home, which I've renounced my home. So then he started begging food from the leftover Mahaprasad from Jagannath. And after some time he wasn't doing that either. He started collecting the rotten rice that even the cows wouldn't eat. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was monitoring Raghunath Das Goswami's austerities, his tapasya. And he would ask Shri Namadar, what is Raghunath doing now? What is Raghunath doing now? And one day Mahaprabhu personally came to Raghunath Das Goswami and snatched that rotten, unfit rice and started eating it, saying, what is this great feast you are having without me? And he was appreciating so much his austerity. And later on we know Raghunath Das Goswami went to Vrindavan, and there he was living on a little buttermilk every second day while offering 1,000 obeisances to all the Vaishnavas. And so Prabhupada spoke on this verse, I gave you that example, that his goal was to reduce eating and sleeping to almost nil, just to keep body and soul together. So we don't have to do that. We're allowed to take prasadam as much as required to sleep 6 hours or so, as Prabhupada recommended. So actually our tapasya is not so great. But if one stays in the association of devotees who are striving to make advancement, then naturally one will also be can avoid that trap of just being routine and mechanical in one's devotional service. Anything else? Okay, thank you all very much. Antarashima Bhagavatam Ki. Shri Prabhupada Ki.